We are now linked up with Belfast and Northern Ireland and with a very special guest who we're indeed very proud to call a friend of ours, Martin O'Meara. He's the Sinn Féin MLA for South Belfast. He's a publisher, an entrepreneur, a civic leader, and he has served as Lord Mayor of Belfast. He was appointed Finance Minister in the North of Ireland, executive, until it collapsed, unfortunately, in 2017. Martin is Director of the Belfast Media Group, and of course that includes the Irish Echo newspaper here and Irish Central. He pioneered the Belfast-Boston Sister City Agreement and the annual New York New Belfast Conference, which is taking place this coming week. Now, let me see if we have our friend, Martin O'Meara. Are you with us, Martin?
Absolutely, Adrian. And if everyone give me as illustrious an entry as that, I would be on their show every day, never mind every swap. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. It's great to be connected again with you, with Anya, and with all the great work you do for our Irish American family. Well, it's appreciated very much in this city as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, I want to, before we get to the thrust of the upcoming week, your Belfast, New Belfast, New York conference here, I would like to ask you, since, you know, we are riddled and we get a fountain of information, not only here but around the world, about what is now down to the wire negotiations with respect to Brexit, that is Britain, the UK exiting the European Union. And again, this is kind of this is the crescendo coming up here. This is not going to go on and on and on. And, you know, in our best interest, we want to know if Northern Ireland is going to be, you know, sidestepped in these negotiations. Obviously, the fall of British Prime Minister Theresa May leaves or adds more uncertainty with respect to that. Give us your view, Martin.
Well, it's the most extraordinary time. In some ways, it's sort of a strange time, maybe even a surreal period in a city which, of course, has experienced many strange times over the years. And that you mentioned Tourism Ireland at the top of the show, and Tourism Ireland has helped transform the city of Belfast. 2.4 million Americans came to the island of Ireland last year, and a record number came north, and I witnessed that myself in the new Grand Central Hotel in Belfast. I could see 18 stories just full of Americans this week when I was in early one morning. And therefore, even as we stand on the threshold of Brexit, which the British government itself says will be damaging to the economy of Britain and also in the north of Ireland and across the island of Ireland, we still seem to be enjoying a period of growth in Belfast, and that's despite the political vacuum as well. So it seems to me that we are resilient enough to come through Brexit economically, but it will deal us a number of blows if it goes ahead. At the same time, politically, we've made so many strides forward. We've moved so far away from that very dark and troubled past that it seems to me that we will be able, as a people, be able to negotiate a way forward, which doesn't result in us I suppose succumbing to the dangers or the scars of a border being imposed on us. We find a way through. Mrs. May, I think, has been an unmitigated disaster for the Tory party in Britain. It was to be her crowning achievement that she would deliver Brexit. She hasn't managed to do that. And interestingly, what was the greatest obstacle to Brexit? It was the nationalist people, in particular of Northern Ireland, of those north of the border, who were ignored absolutely in the preparations for Brexit. But because we stood up with very strong support of the Irish government and then the support of the EU 26, and we said we would not allow you to damage the peace process, to turn back the clock, to impose a hard border, to tear up, as the former Taoiseach John Bruton says, to tear up the Good Friday Agreement. And because of that obstacle, because of the what the British like to call the Irish question, Mrs. May was not able to deliver Brexit. What's coming next, Adrian, is the $64,000 question, because certainly the favourite to succeed her is Boris Johnson, who is shaping up for a no-deal Brexit. Mm. So that's a hard Brexit.
That's going from the frying pan into the fire. It's worrying, but again, tough decisions, and you know the resurgence of Northern Ireland, Belfast in particular. It seems like you know it. If there is a place that has proven historically to rise to whatever occasion comes down, you mentioned there the troubles in Ireland. Of course, we would expect that one way or the other, that Northern Ireland will indeed rise to the occasion. I just want to, again, before we move on, can you give us an idea of how the return of a hard border in Northern Ireland would affect not just Northern Ireland, but the island of Ireland?
Well, it would be unimaginable. The damage would be, I think, on a scale that we haven't seen in 50 years. And think about it this way. One dairy production company alone in County Fermanagh, Lakeland Dairies, moves 600 million litres of milk across the border every year. It moves 100 lorries full of milk across the border on Christmas Day alone. And that's because on the island of Ireland we have an absolutely integrated agri-foods industry, and it's been integrated since certainly the last 20 years since the advent of the single market in Europe. But it has then given birth to this really connected and successful farming industry. So we have a very successful pig industry in Ireland, but two-thirds of the pigs in the south of Ireland are slaughtered in the north. Lambs is the other way about. And in making, for example, a cheese product, the milk moves across the border to County Monaghan and back, and then moves to County Kerry and so on. So the farming industry would be dealt a very severe blow. And interestingly, and I say again, living in these strange times, the Ulster Farmers Union is the voice of the majority of Northern Ireland farmers. Traditionally a very conservative pro-unionist body. Now, of course, they're almost like a trade union, so politics isn't their bag, but I think they would accept that they have always been seen as the voice of rural unionism. And they have absolutely excoriated the Tory party and the DUP here for supporting Brexit in a way never seen before. And they couldn't be clearer. They have said that if Brexit goes ahead and they lose EU support and you fracture the all-island economy, that it will do untold damage. And that's repeated across all the business networks, Adrian. We have 21 business networks here in the north, and all 21, for the first time in their history, are all saying the same thing. That is that a hard border, exclusion from the single market, exclusion from the European Customs Union, would set us back at least 50 years, perhaps farther. So I want you to think about that, but then add to that the dangers of imposing a hard border, which I presume, one presumes, and I stood in Buffalo, New York last May at the border and saw what a hard border looks like. And of course, you have wonderful races with Canada, but boy, it's a hard border. And a hard border here where not only we have the economic damage of trucks being stopped and cars being stopped and passports being stolen, but add to that the fact that a border has to be guarded. And who will guard that border? And then who will guard the guards? And you're then starting to play Russian roulette, in my view, with the Irish peace process. And I do want to mention, Aidan, since we last spoke, we had the awful murder of Aoire McKee in Derry. And that shooting dead of that young woman in Derry came on the same night that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the US Congress, came to Belfast. One of the greatest moments, I thought, in the last 5 years of political turmoil here. And she spoke with our dear friend Congressman Richie Neal from Massachusetts and some other Congress people and maybe some senators. And she spoke in a community college in the Titanic Quarter, which you've been to, which is sort of one of the new tourist-friendly areas of Belfast and technology-friendly. And she gave a really, I think, an inspiring speech about why Brexit would not be allowed to play fast and loose with the peace process. And I left that meeting and thinking to myself, because the DUP were there, Sinn Féin was there, all the parties were represented, the civic leaders, and I left that thinking to myself, this is possible. You know, we will find a way to resolve the Brexit issue and the peace process issue. And I said to the Reverend Harold Good, one of the heroes of the peace process, who witnessed IRA decommissioning and was an architect of the peace process, I was saying to him, you know, we have more work to do. And he was saying, maybe in the autumn, he says, because things are very polarized politically, maybe in the autumn. But of course, we didn't realize that night that Aoire McKee would be shot dead in Belfast. And she was the epitome of everything that we all love about Belfast, this resilient city, because she was a young woman, she was a writer, she was gay, she was outspoken in her own way, a campaigner. She was not from my political parish. She was born a Catholic in North Belfast. She was buried in from a Protestant cathedral. But she was everything you would love in citizens of your city, in that she wanted to remain here, to stay here, to build her future here. And that killing that night, that murder that night, was carried out by a group who would really love to see a hard border in Ireland, a small faction of yesterday's men, and I view of know-nothings, but they would dearly love the British government to make the catastrophic mistake of saying, we're going to force you out of the European Union despite you voting to remain, and then we're going to impose a hard border on the island. That would be like a birthday present for the people, that small faction of dissidents behind the murder of Aoire McKee and others.
My guest friends, Martin O'Mueller, indeed a politician, but above all, indeed an entrepreneur, and that might bring us. Although I do have to tell you about that about your own nose for politics, having spent 10 years. And the Belfast City Council at a time that brought its own uncertainty. Can you just start there and tell us what that was like at that period?
Well, Adrian, I'll take up your offer, but it's so important also that you don't allow old codgers like me to live in the past, but I'll frame it in today's reality. That is that the city of Belfast, long regarded as a unionist bastion, if you wish, really the centre. My friends from East Belfast joke about this being the heart of the empire. The city of Belfast, in the most recent elections, for the first time ever, has returned a cohort of councillors in which unionism cannot form a majority, even with the help of the Alliance Party, which is a mighty centre-of-the-road progressive party. But even the unionist parties and the Alliance Party together only form 29, a block of 29, and the council is 60 members. So those of your readers familiar with the old days of marches here and unionist strikes and even the late Reverend Paisley and no, outside City Hall, all that and this is when it's still an extraordinary time. All that's now in the past. So when I went into City Hall in 1987, I had to wear a flak jacket. I was not allowed to speak. I was put out by the police for speaking in Irish in my first meeting after 10 minutes. I wasn't allowed to go to any civic dinners or functions for visitors. And I was famously barred from the what we call the Lord Mayor's parlour, the Lord Mayor's suite of offices and reception rooms. And I saw the change when I came back in 2011. I saw a period of change, a much more, I think, progressive, forward-looking city, outward-looking city. We were world champions, Adrian, at looking in and looking back. And I saw the change. I was very pleased to become the first citizen to become the mayor in 2013-14. But the change has continued apace. And why I say about this in a strange time, we haven't had an assembly, much to my deep regret, in 2.5 years. But the change is still being driven forward by young people like Liara McKee. And they're almost saying to the rest of us, look, you know, we understand there are big, big political questions that impact on our lives, but we're going to continue building a beautiful city and a change city. And in that, I see a lot of sense because we can't allow the paralysis of politics, which is very real and there's very understandable reasons for it, we can't allow that to stop all the good work that's going on. A lot of bridge building work, a lot of reconciliation work, a lot of grassroots entrepreneurial work, sports startups and so on. So the great contradiction, Adrian, you know, I'm a politician without an assembly, without a forum, and there's nothing, I think, more crippling to political life if we don't have a functioning government and an assembly. And yet, despite that, I look around and I see, especially the young people of Belfast and the new communities of Belfast, Adrian, the Bangladeshis and the Filipinos and so on. And interestingly, tonight in City Hall, so a City Hall from which, you know, I was dismissed in 1987 for speaking Irish, tonight the main function in City Hall tonight is an event to mark the end of Ramadan. The Eid festival. So that for me is, you know, that's one of the reasons why when I look at it, I say this is almost surreal that we have come from that closed Belfast to much more open Belfast. And the job for me certainly is to accelerate the pace of change while trying to take people with us who find change difficult.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, and particularly for those, you know, who only lived in the shadow of a dark period in Northern Ireland. There were those who say, well, please God, one day there will be a peace, and then that should be good, you know, for the north of Ireland, for investment, for, you know, a great part of Ireland that is dealing with all of the struggles. And obviously waiting for a better day with God's help, and indeed we know not going to knock God's help, but that is something that you have been to the forefront in changing, not just in your political life, but taking the bull by the horns and say, listen, the most important thing right now is to make sure that economically Northern Ireland, and for you, Belfast in particular, we have to move forward. And if we don't, make our links and bring investment and bring business into Northern Ireland, you know, we'll still be, you know, crying about, the scourge of what has taken place in Northern Ireland. That's going to go on and on. And in hindsight, of course, it is a good job that, the historic Good Friday Agreement brought stability and shone a light again on Northern Ireland and on Belfast. But Martin, if people are struggling economically, if we take a look at the Belfast that was indeed had a symbolism of uncertainty, of little stability. It was a time for action. And again, with yourself at the forefront, looking around and looking towards America and developing those contacts that would not only continue the, if we might excuse the pun, the special relationship of America and Northern Ireland. That had to be, a tremendous undertaking. And who did you get in that room, at that time, after your term in Belfast City Council, and you were now intent on becoming an entrepreneur, somebody who said, listen, we can't wait for this. We can't wait for this to pass. It's not going to pass unless we do something. Can you bring us to that point, and at that point in your own life?
Well, first of all, I think I only made a small contribution, but of course when we all make a small contribution, it can really make a difference. I want to just say two things. First of all, the element that was missing over recent years was the element of justice. So we're almost there, I think, in terms of the peace process, despite some of the setbacks that we've experienced, some of them at a very high price, such as the murder of Ira McKee. But sadly, the issue of fair play and equality promised in John Hume's famous word, parity of esteem. That mm-hmm. is that not only would everyone be employed in that, but your identity, your culture, who you are, that would be respected as well. Back to the great Black Civil Rights anthem of I Am Somebody. And the element of justice should have meant over the last 21 years that, for example, there should be more respect for the Irish language and an Irish language act as there is in Wales with Welsh and mm-hmm. Scotland with Gaelic. And that was a little canker in the centre of the peace process and was not resolved. And then eventually issues like that, issues of justice, issues of dealing with the past, the truth about the past, issues of equal treatment of women in terms of we have the most conservative laws covering abortion, which I know is a hot issue in the States as well, and mm-hmm. people have very strong views on this, but we have the most conservative laws in all of Europe, along with the Faroe Islands, in relation to access to abortion. Totally, it's a crime here to access abortion, even in cases of rape, incest, or sexual crime. And that justice bit, that finally held us back. And my message to the Americans is, and to our great friends in Congress, and to our great friends in Irish America, is look, we've made great progress on the economic bit. We need to make progress in the justice bit, because until we sort out equal respect for people, which goes beyond saying you can get a job, we're not going to make progress here. In terms of the economic bit, I mean, we have been so fortunate that we have so many champions in Irish America and in boardrooms in Irish America. So the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is based in Belfast, and that's not an accident. 300 very highly paid technology analysts and experts work for the Chicago Mercantile Exchange because of a woman called Dorothea Pacini. That's our married name, of course, because she's an Irish American. And she was involved in the search for a European headquarters for CEM. And I think they have now as many people here as they have in London, which is their other big base. And she, obviously, the decision had to be made on strict criteria, but she was a voice for coming to Belfast. The same with Allstate, which was the first big American mm-hmm. company in after the ceasefire. The same with Liberty IT, which came in around 1998, 1999. The same with the City Group. The City now employed 2,500 people in Belfast. So the Americans, I think, realized the talent in the city, the strong universities, the opportunity that peace brought. And there were in this city people with a lot more vision than I had, because none of us imagined when they set up NI Screen over 20 years ago now, or almost 20 years ago, that bringing Game of Thrones would not only result in everyday Game of Thrones was on set, 500 jobs created, but as well as that, it now has has spawned this huge tourism industry.
Absolutely.
And since you were here, Adrian, there are buses around the town every morning, Game of Thrones tour, people coming in from Brazil, from Russia, from right around the world to witness and experience.
And from North America, big time.
And so I think everyone wanted people saw the opportunity not only to have profitable businesses, but they also saw that this is the work of peace, that this is a matter of life and death. And I always think that it differentiates people. We look on with envy at the strength of the economy in the Republic of Ireland and the growth of foreign direct investment. But when I hear people from Belfast, for example, or Derry speak about their passion to attract international investment, I always think there's a little edge to what they're saying, because they realize it is a matter of life and death. Because to embed peace, without a doubt, you do need what I talked about earlier, justice and people treated fairly. But you also need a successful 21st century, go ahead, hard driving, brimming with talent economy and society. And that, I think, is what we have tried to create. And our friends in Irish America have not been found wanting in that regard. And I suppose New York, New Belfast falls into that niche, as the Americans say, that niche or that capture.
Yeah. Now, the 10th annual New York, New Belfast conference taking place here next week from the 12th to the 14th. Now, when you started that, you already had a success under your belt in terms of the twinning of cities with Belfast and Boston, the sister city agreement, which indeed many would have thought, well, that's going to be a one-day wonder, that'll be fine, there'll be a ribbon cutting, there'll be a photo op, and then, that will go into the archives and the annals of the Boston, Belfast great historical day. You, I think, were again, or that sister city linking, that also showed that this is okay. It brings a lot of goodwill, but it has to bring something that is sustainable in terms of, again, of a link, get your Boston Belfast link. It has to bring something other than, again, something on the surface that many might think is, that's a narrow back thing, they love to be connected with Ireland. That was indeed, though, that was the catalyst for what would become very successful, not only in Boston, but in New York. Bring us to now 10 years later, the New York New Belfast Conference, and how that has progressed over a decade.
Well, it's interesting, Adrian, because you make my point for me, because the Boston-Belfast sister-city relationship would not exist were it not for Marty Walsh, another great Irish American and the mayor of Boston.
Yeah.
Boston is the university's capital of America, the life sciences capital of America, and yet he decided to make the link with Belfast when he could have had his pickings of global cities. And in doing that, the mayor, I think, is a very wise person as well. He realized it would make a big difference to Belfast. And I remember speaking to someone from Invest Northern Ireland in Boston, and they said, look, once we say we're your sister city to a prospect, the doors are opened. They said they may not even have known that, but once they hear that, they said, oh, that's interesting, so come talk to us. So New York, New Belfast, first of all, rests on the generosity and support and enthusiasm and encouragement of a number of prominent Irish Americans, led by Sean Kelly of KPMG, Michael George of Versant, the Jim Clarkin of Moat Hennessy, Geraldine Hughes, our great expat and the actress, and people who said, look, we have very busy lives, but if we could help encourage links of community and culture, but especially business, because business are the most sustainable links you can build across the Atlantic, and they're also the most productive, because if someone gets into a business link or a partnership or an investment, that can last 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and can really blossom and create all sorts of economic benefits. So we have started out, I think, modestly. This year we'll bring the biggest delegation from Belfast. It's 33 people, and it's the first time the Belfast Chamber of Trade and Commerce has said, we want to partner this, and they're bringing out people from right across the city, all types of businesses. But what I really love, when I say about this extraordinary time we live in, the Belfast Chamber delegation will be led by its president, and its president is Rajesh Rana, who's from our most famed Indian family in Belfast, Lord Rana, his father, a great hotelier. And it's wonderful when we go into the room with some of our Irish-American friends, we say, this is the president of the Belfast Chamber. And Rajesh comes forward. I think that's a very positive message of change from Belfast. And Rajesh says that last year he made a connection with CIE Tours, and you know what a formidable company that is, and how many Americans they bring here. And from that connection, he's got extra business for his new Hampton by Hilton Hotel, first ever in Belfast, which opened this year. And you know, we opened, I think, nine hotels in the last year. So the mission's really quite simple. Adrian, it's let's go to New York with a message of progress, positivity from Belfast. Unemployment in Belfast is the lowest it's been in 50 years. We're down around 2%. We still, and this is extraordinary, still continue to attract international investment. We are still turning out several thousand very talented graduates every year. Tourism is at an all-time high, and we still have a very strong business-oriented cohort of people who are making their home here. They want to be here, and they want to build. And we're saying to the people we meet, would you like to help us to build a better Belfast to our mutual benefit? To our mutual benefit, because this isn't charity. We're trying to build links which are good for you and good for us. And just one example of that is both universities from Belfast, both big universities, Queen's and Ulster University, are going out. And both those universities are very esteemed colleges, but they bring in only a fraction of American students. Trinity, UCD, University College Cork, University College Galway bring in. So there's still so much potential, I think, gains. And of course, the students come to study here, it's to the mutual benefit, because we do think that, especially those who are studying peace studies and conflict resolution, which is huge on campuses across the US, that they get the real story here and have a chance to study here, but to be part of building the economy as well. So the mission is simple, and we're really lucky that we're so many doors open for us in Irish America, which has made this conference possible over the last 10 years. And I look forward to seeing some of our friends who make it their business to come in and then who follow up with either investments. Very pleased this year that one of our Irish American friends, Mike Brewster of Wells Fargo, came in and invested in a startup last December. That's the sort of thing we like to see. Our college visits are we are the only city in Belfast that plays professional ice hockey. Yes. Neither you nor I may understand the rules, but it's a huge sport here. 5,000 people supporting the Belfast Giants, and that has also been a great magnet, I think, for Americans grabbing their attention as well and bringing them in. Mm-hmm. So much to do, but we're so fortunate that these are real practical steps that Irish America is taking, building the peace, fostering reconciliation, and doing it through economic links.
But to have a New York State controller invest in Northern Ireland, at again very much based on the peace process, but more importantly, the controller of New York State is not again going to write a check, you know, on a Graham McCree kind of basis. That gives such credence and stability to those that are saying, well, boy, if the pension funds from New York State are invested, you know, in Northern Ireland, things must be pretty good there, pretty solid.
Well, listen, what a great advocate and ambassador for the peace process we have, and Tom DiNapoli, and he always says that when he plants his flag, every pension fund in the U.S., and he's one of the biggest, but every pension fund and every investor in the U.S. sits up and takes notice. And I'm delighted that Tom DiNapoli will be our guest speaker at the luncheon in New York on Friday 14th at Pier A, because he really put his money where his mouth is. But more than that, he acts on behalf of the hardworking people of New York State, the state employees, whether it's the postmen, yeah, postwomen, whether it's really right across the civil service. I mean, he has to be a very prudent steward of their money. And I think it's a real vote of confidence that he's continued to invest. I met him in Albany in May, and he says we're looking for more opportunities. He's also very interested in investing in Derry. He was made an honorary doctor of Ulster University last year and insisted that take place at the graduation in Derry. So he wants really to take concrete steps, which he wouldn't have to do. Adrian, as you know, he could attend a few events and be as pro-Irish as anyone else, but he has gone that extra mile. And I think that's typical of the type of response we have received when we go and present opportunities in Irish America. But the other great advertisers, those have already invested, these companies that I've mentioned, you know, who last year, Allstate of Chicago opened a $30 million building that they have, that they constructed on the banks of the Lagan in the city center. And they're not a company that likes to build its own buildings. They like to lease, they like to rent. And so they were really making a strong statement about, despite the challenges here, that this is where they see a bright future. And our job is to encourage more of that, despite the Brexit turbulence at the minute and of course the absence of government.
Now, before we wrap up here, I want to clarify something, because maybe a lot of our listeners say, well, that all of that stuff is great, but that's kind of a closed shop, and whatever goes on in those negotiations, that has little to do with us, or, you know, we could be standing outside the door. And there may be people who are listening, or those who read the Irish Echo or Irish Central, who may say, God, you know, maybe not myself, but I belong to a company, and if I could bring that story to them, that might be good. How open is the opportunity for the New York New Belfast conference, or indeed the outcome of that, that a lot of people would be interested in?
Well, we always say to everyone who's interested in supporting the peace and forming links with Belfast, the first thing you can do is visit. That it's expensive to travel in the summer, because of course transatlantic airfares are expensive in the summer. But we're open 365 days a year, and the first thing I always say is to visit, as you and Anya have done. But after that, I'm a big proponent of cultural links, of community links, of educational links. Professor Feerick of Fordham University,
John.
Under the radar, John, under the radar quietly for 20 years, has been bringing his law students to Dublin for a week and then Belfast for a week. So he is, you know, that wasn't by accident. He insisted on coming to Belfast as well. And I've been very pleased in recent years that we've been able to bring some of our Irish artists now in New York, including Marcus Robinson, who's, of course, World Trade Center, has been documenting that since 2005 or 2006. This cross-fertilization, this exchange of artists and artworks, and also, of course, of some of our great filmmakers, Orla George, Terry George,
who's
in Belfast, you know, and Orla George, who's an Oscar winner, recently opened an exhibition here, which is really about these crises in the peace process that we face. So there's room for everyone, and you know, in the very pleased that in the New York, New Belfast conference, the opening night this coming Thursday in the American Irish Historical Society, that we focus on culture, we focus on literature, and we will have, I think, the best of both cities. Bran Houston, the Belfast singer-songwriter, will be there. But we'll also have our beloved Larry Kerwin singing a great song that he wrote about Belfast and Berlin. And we will have poetry reading. We'll have John Kearns from the Irish-American Artists and Writers. And, you know, just this last bit about the cultural links, we're bringing over Donovan Wiley. Donovan Wiley, who's a professor in the College of Art in Belfast, which has been open 170 years. And he's one of the most outstanding photographers in the world. But what he photographed memorably, he photographed the fortifications, the forts that the British Army had on the hilltops. And after after the ceasefires, the British Army facilitated this. And he has this record, but they're stunning photographs. So he sort of photographs things we took for granted. Hopefully we won't see that ever again. But Donovan Wiley is coming over to Belfast to present. But I'm really pleased that Angela Kelly, Professor of Photography at the Rochester Institute of Technology, who's been in New York now 40 years, who's a great Belfast photographer, she's coming in to present work that she also created about coming home. So that sort of marriage, I think, of the culture element of this is just as important to me as the business bit. So I do hope that those who think the business bit isn't for me make some attempt to come along and plant the seed and build those links. Thank you very much.
You know, Morten Oliver, I want to what is the best website, the best source of information, not only of Northern Ireland, of the tourism, but on you know, the New York, New Belfast 10th anniversary. What is the best way to get that information?
Well, I suspect the best way is to search New York, New Belfast Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it will spring up. It's actually on the Iceland-events.com website, and Iceland spelled A-I-S-L-I-N-G, like your famous Iceland Immigration Center in New York. But there, if people search New York, the Belfast Conference, there's a full program there. I think we have 50 speakers or performers over the period of 2 days. We're putting an extra day in for our friends from the Belfast Chamber. We're visiting Council Member Danny Drum.
We have a list and a half, and
we want to see new faces. You know, there are some new people coming in. We want to see new faces who think, well, look, it's time that I got back to this link, whether it's the link of history, heritage, politics, and join us in making a contribution to building a better Belfast. And we think you will find that very rewarding in all sorts of ways.
We look forward indeed to not only attending the 10th annual New York, New Belfast conference here from June 12th to 14th, but indeed meeting again, you know, the new faces, the new people, the younger people who indeed are popping up and not letting, you know, any grass, you know, grow under their feet. Okay, friends, our guest, by the way, thank you, Martin O'Muller, as we listen to IrishRadio.com worldwide.